And I want to welcome you all to this webinar where we're going to talk about the crosses. And before we actually get into discussing it, I'd like to point out some of the protocol that we like to go through. I noticed many of you have put yourself on self-mute, and that's the right thing to do when there's actual talking on my part, but I still would like this to be interactive. So as I go through this, if there's any questions or anything that you want explained in a different way, please, just put yourself off self-mute, and you don't even have to raise your hand because we're not a big group right now. You can actually just begin to talk. So we can do it that way. Okay, so unless there's questions, I think I'll proceed. So we're going to talk about the crosses and why they're important and why they produce a point of confusion for a lot of people. We all know that the signs find themselves on different crosses. This is one of the first things we learn in astrology. And yet, so much of DK's teachings make reference to being on a certain point on the path and somehow being on a cross that has to do with that. So we're going to look at that a little more closely and see what exactly he means by that. So before we actually go into the crosses, we're going to go back in time to the beginning of the human being, when the human being first incarnated into a physical form. Now, we've all had many, many lives since then, but this is the beginning of man's incarnation. So we are told that Aries initiates the cycle of manifestation to come into incarnation. And Aries, as we know, is the very first sign of the zodiac if you're looking from the beginning to the end. Aries is about beginnings. So this is where the man actually begins. And we know that the esoteric ruler of Aries is Mercury, and Mercury has to do with the mind. So it is in Aries that the first impulse is awakened, and it becomes as an initial idea. That initial idea that comes into the mind, because it's mental, is to institute some kind of activity which eventually takes form. In other words, it eventually manifests. So Aries is the birthplace of ideas. We know that. We know that it's number one, it's the first of the zodiac. Therefore, there's a really close relationship to it and deity. Deity being the father. And so therefore the spark of mind would come into Aries. So Aries is the birthplace of ideas, and a true idea is in reality a spiritual impulse that eventually takes form. An idea is a form of sorts, whether it's subjective or eventually becomes objective. So in Aries comes the will to incarnate. Now that's, again, before incarnation has ever taken place. So we have established that it takes place on the mental plane. So as said, the individual entity has yet not manifested into physical form. DK also tells us that the individual entities emerge as mental entities in the sign of Aries. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Then when we move into the sign of Taurus, these entities become emotional desire entities. And then in Gemini, they emerge as vital entities. So that's the etheric bodies. So we have the astral body being developed, formed in Taurus. Taurus is all about instincts and the desire nature. We have the etheric body being formed in Gemini. And then in Cancer, man takes physical form. So all souls as individual entities come into human incarnation for the very first time in the sign of Cancer. So into this ocean of physical plane existence, we as a humanity emerged thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. But the interesting thing to notice with this creative process is that solidification happens from the top down. First, it's a mental idea. So we have often heard people say that the thought form was created in the mind of God before manifestation, before a universe, before a galaxy was formed. There was this idea in the mind of God. Well, we're not that far different. The first impulse to incarnate is in the mind, happens in Aries, and then all the other aspects of the individual get formed, and then we're told that in Cancer, that's when we are born as a humanity. So Cancer, we know, stands for mass consciousness, mass humanity. And it is a womb of sorts, right? Even the sign, the glyph, has this womb-like effect. So it's known as the home, right? Cancer is known as the home. It's even known as the ashram on a higher turn of the spiral. So this is the home, this is the womb out of which humanity has emerged. So now, when we look at that, we're going to now move on to the journey that man takes. What is the evolutionary process? What is reincarnation all about? Well, we know that the first part is to develop a personality, to become personality conscious. The next thing is to expand the soul and to become aware of one's soul. And after that, of course, the last part of the journey is spiritual awareness, which is the life aspect. So we see here all three aspects being developed in the journey that we all take, and that will be all reflected through these three crosses. They're called the cosmic crosses. So as we look at these crosses, we're going to look at them in terms of the evolutionary process, the evolutionary stage of development. In the early part of the evolutionary phase, which takes thousands of lives or thousands of incarnations, we are told it takes place on the mutable cross. Here, man has opportunity to experience all the various signs, all 12 signs, while he's moving through the mutable cross phase. So it matters not what sign one is born under. One can be born under Cancer, which is considered being on the cardinal cross. One can be born in Taurus, considered to be on the fixed cross. But the movement in the evolutionary process is considered to be all on the mutable cross. So thousands of lives can occur on the mutable cross. And then as man then evolves sufficiently in consciousness, he is said to move on to the fixed cross. And there you wouldn't have thousands of lives. It would be more hundreds of lives. So as I have said, it doesn't matter what sign one is born under, whether that sign is mutable, fixed, or cardinal. The consideration is always has to do with the evolutionary process and where man is fixed where man stands from an evolutionary perspective. When the level of consciousness has been determined for a person, then the astrologer knows which of the first two crosses, either the mutable or the fixed, has prime influence. So this is just an overview, and we'll get into more detail in a minute. I just want to make sure that we understand that what we're going to look at has to do with where man's consciousness is at any given stage of development. Any questions so far? Okay. Eventually, by the time one is considered in consciousness to be upon the cardinal cross, because I've only talked about the mutable and fixed so far, then he is one with the life that ensouls our planetary life. And there's nowhere else to go. After one becomes a master, he's only on the cardinal cross. There are no more crosses. So you can have your sun sign in any sign, irrespective of what cross you may find yourself on. In other words, what direction you are moving on, it will be reflected at your stage of development, not the sign that you're born under. So let's look now at what the mutable cross from an evolutionary perspective really represents. It is also called the common cross or the cross of the hidden Christ. That in itself is a clue, the cross of the hidden Christ. Okay, we know that the Christ consciousness needs to be born in the cave of the heart, and it is born in the sign of Virgo, which hides the Christ consciousness. It's in the cave. Well, Virgo finds itself on the mutable cross. This is a hint. So the masses or average humanity finds themselves on the mutable cross as far as their direction, their stage of development. At that point, man is blind to the larger picture. They are swamped by their emotions and only interested in I, me, mine. The focus in that point of evolution is on material things, on the physical body, and on sex. So the life for long ages, and I mean really ages, thousands of lives, is selfish and self-centered. One's efforts are for oneself, for one's own satisfaction and personality enterprises. And this becomes steadily stronger and stronger as one develops and starts to taste all that there is out there. Those desires grow in intensity, and that's all part of the way we grow and develop and evolve. This is the present situation for the masses. Think of the masses right now. Are they not selfish? Are they not self-centered? Isn't it all about I, me, what's good for me? That's what we see all around us. So through evolution and through various incarnations, what do we develop? This has already been covered before. We'll just go through that again. We develop personality consciousness, which just expands to soul consciousness, and then eventually to spiritual awareness. And all of this is done through the three crosses. So this you've already seen because this was the opening. These colors are definitely there for a reason. So just reviewing what we've said so far, the mutable cross, one has thousands of lives, thousands of incarnations on this mutable cross. The mutable cross represents the third aspect, the intelligence aspect. And that's what the learning is all about on this cross. That's what the experiences are all about, to learn to develop the intelligence aspect, to develop the intelligence petals within the egoic lotus. When one finds himself on the next cross, the fixed cross, it doesn't take thousands of lives. It's more like hundreds of lives. And what does one do there? It develops the second aspect, the love aspect. And eventually, when one makes it to the third, one then is one with, the consciousness is one with the planetary life. And it's the first aspect, the life aspect. So again, any sun sign in any of the 12 signs doesn't matter. When you are moving through the mutable cross phase, you can be born in any one of the signs. And the direction of the mutable cross follows the natural direction based on the precession of the equinox. So having said that it is the common cross, the word common refers to the masses. It's for average humanity, and it's for repeated incarnations to experience the various lessons that are learned through each one of the signs. And of course, the individual is only ruled at the time by the orthodox or the exoteric rulers. When one finds themselves on the mutable cross, it leads to continuous expansions of consciousness. But we can say that it doesn't matter which cross one finds themselves on. All of life experiences is supposed to lead us to continuous expansions of consciousness. So on the mutable cross, it's still about instinctual or mass consciousness, which has to then emerge and become intellectual consciousness. One isn't automatically intelligent. That is part of the growth process. One has instincts at the beginning. Instinct then becomes intelligence, instinct to intellect. So a duality is then developed where a conscience is born. And what does a conscience make one do? It makes one ask, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this. You see, maybe what I've done isn't right. So you start to question, and that duality is a very important part of man's development. It is said that until a person has a conscience, they're not even aware yet. They're not even aware of life or anything. It's still all about selfish me. The conscience makes you think, even though it's rudimentary thinking, it still makes one think. So he is known to metaphorically mount the mutable cross, and for a long, long time is imprisoned in the form. And here begins the lessons that he must learn until he has transformed the servitude to form life into service to humanity. So any questions so far? Just unmute yourself and... do I have everybody muted? No, I don't. So none of you is muted by me. So you can just speak up as you see that you need to or you want to. You don't have to even raise your hand.
Yeah, I had a question.
Go ahead.
I'm not too sure if I remember what it was, but you said something about when we're born and we come in on or go on the cross and go in some direction, but I didn't ask the question when you said it, so I'm not too sure exactly what you meant.
Well, the directions will be explained as we move along. So if it has to do with the direction, it's the next area that we're going to work on together.
So if you say something that I don't understand, can I ask right then?
Sure.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that'll be fine because like right now I've something you said I didn't understand and then I didn't say nothing until you broke.
Okay. But I think that part of it will get explained because I'm trying to establish background first and then I get into the nitty-gritties of it because this is an area that for the most part does create a lot of confusion through the books, through the reading of it. We read them and we don't understand the direction, we don't understand the mutable cross, the fixed cross as it pertains to our point of evolution. Okay, we're going to move along and we're now going to look at the mutable cross. Its sole purpose, that's what the goal is to develop a personality. That's what its purpose is, to develop a personality so that the individual can become a coordinated and an integrated personality. And again, you know, once that stage is reached, it is quite far along the path of evolution. We take it so much for granted as we're studying, for example, in Maurya Federation, because the assumption is that we're all fairly integrated and we're all fairly coordinated. But that is a quite a development in the human being to become a functioning, integrated, and coordinated personality, and to be able to be a somebody in the world. It's having reached the Leo stage when one is finally a somebody, a self. But it takes thousands of lives to get there, because so much of this process, or so much of being on this path, is governed by desire. And through earthly experiences, one learns. The intelligence is then little by little being developed. So one moves from instinct to intelligence. Now, here is what we're going to look at and see the direction. Here we're looking at the precession of the equinox. And the precession of the equinox moves clockwise. It moves from Aries, here would be Aries, you can see my little pointer here, to Taurus via Pisces. This would be Pisces. So whatever sign is on the cusp, these lines represent cusps, and each one here represents a field or a house or an area. So all of this is governed, let's say, by Aries. All of this here is governed by Pisces. So the direction that the precession of the equinox goes is clockwise, just like the arrows show. And what I've done here is I've tried to show us how this is how we move. This is how we move from one age to the other age. For example, we go back to the when Taurus, for 2,500 or 600 years, we were in the age of Taurus. And what did Taurus represent? Taurus represent the greatness of Egypt. The bull was worshipped. The bull was sanctified. It was their deity. The golden calf represents the era, the age of the Egyptian age, or the age of Taurus. Then we have the Jewish dispensation, which was brought on by the ram or Aries. This is the beginning of the Old Testament, is the Jewish dispensation, which then still lasted, if we're looking at ages, roughly around 2,500 years. So from here to here, you've got 5,000 years in terms of ages. And that's roughly, because it's a little more than 2,500, it's 26 plus something. So then we move into the Piscean age, the beginning of the Piscean age, which is the birth of Jesus Christ, or then the Christ. So we're now still coming out of that age, and we're set to be moving towards and into the Aquarian age right here. So you see that the direction of this is clockwise. It's a clockwise direction. So we're all following that, right? We moved from the Taurian age to the age of Aries, to the Piscean age, and now we're moving into the Aquarian age.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please do.
I thought the equinox was where the sun was positioned in accordance to where the earth is. That happens every year.
But the precession, the movement as we move, is always in a clockwise direction. It's called the precession of the equinox, right? More than that, I know what you're saying. The equinox is the autumnal, and the spring equinoxes have to do with various signs that we're in, where we have equal time for day and night. But this is referred to as the precession of the equinox. More than that, I don't.
Well, am I to think that this is like the rotation of the sun around the our Milky Way?
Perhaps, yes. It
Okay.
definitely has to do with the rotation, and we're following that stream. So
Okay.
when we do move into the mutable cross, that is the stream or the direction that one moves in. It's in a clockwise direction. So, in spite of the fact that we're so conditioned to look at the signs from the opposite direction, from the anti-clockwise direction, in fact, When man steps onto the mutable cross, he moves in a clockwise direction. So an astrologer has to, an esoteric astrologer has to be able to read what is it like moving from Aries to Pisces. So the whole journey is opposite to what we have been conditioned to think that it is. When we read esoteric astrology by the Tibetan, he gives us a little bit. He doesn't really go into too much explanation of what it is like to go from one sign to the next and what man has to learn. He does cover that to some extent, and we can see that it does make sense. It absolutely makes sense if you can get one's head around the fact that you're moving in a different direction than what we have been conditioned to think. So thinking about that and considering that, then we look at the actual things that one has to learn as one moves along in that direction on the mutable or common cross. Now, remember, every time that there's an incarnation, it's not done in a sequential order. One doesn't move from one sign to the next sign to the next sign. You can have thousands of lives, and eventually you have an opportunity to experience every sign, but it doesn't necessarily go in a sequential order. But since we're looking at this mutable cross, we want to just pull out the signs that fall under the mutable cross and see, because they're the ones that are more emphasized in this directional stage that one moves in. It's all about developing some aspect of intelligence. It doesn't mean that if you're born in Taurus or if you're born in Aquarius, these are on the fixed cross, that you're not learning something about intelligence. You still are. It's just that I haven't developed each one of those. I've only developed the ones that find themselves on the mutable cross. Does that make sense? Are you guys following that? So the important thing to realize here is that it's the personality, and the personality is the third aspect. So an aspect of the personality is still being developed while on this cross. So in Pisces, one has to move from negative impressionability. Remember, Pisces receives all these impressions. Pisces is water. Pisces is very open and receptive and is very easily moved by impressions or emotions or anything that inundates the individual. It's like being in water, and you're surrounded by water, you're in water, you can almost drown in that water. So Pisces has to move from negative impressionability to the power to eventually serve intelligently while still on the mutable cross. In Sagittarius, eventually one learns goes from gluttony again to an intelligent and inspired vision. And we know that Sagittarius is all about the greater vision. In Virgo, from the domination of the material life to an intelligent awareness of the divine within. So you see, this is still not the Christ consciousness that has been born and birthed in Virgo. This is still about developing intelligence. And in Gemini, from instability, which is the dual life, to an intelligent recognition of something higher. So that starts to develop in Gemini. But every step along the way, there's all the other signs, and they all help the individual develop a form of an intelligence, some aspect of intelligence. So here are some hypothetical examples of people on the mutable cross. Remember that while moving in this direction, the exoteric planets rule, and also the centers below the diaphragm are the ones that predominate. This is still The individual is not what we call redeemed yet. The individual has not sufficiently purified the lower vehicles. So therefore, the centers below the diaphragm are the ones that are dominant here. So these are emotional people who've not developed their minds yet to the extent that they can be effective in the world, and they have very weak wills. If your will is strong, you can discipline yourself. Discipline requires will. And in order to make changes in the life, you've got to be fairly disciplined and have a strong will. These are still what we call relatively weak wills. And this may include people who are spiritual, such as mystics and churchgoers, still very emotional people. And so some examples here are Vincent van Gogh, Marilyn Monroe, Marlon Brando, Greta Garbo, Andy Gibb is in here. I think Leonie kind of picked this up, and she's from Australia, and so was Andy Gibb. So you get a sense that a lot of people that we even know find themselves in movement in the direction through the mutable cross. And we have all, or maybe still are, on the mutable cross ourselves. So now we get into somehow more advanced, though not necessarily better, are those intelligent people with strong personalities, but they're still driven by desire. And the desire is for money, power, and sex. Do we know any of these people? Absolutely we do. This look around us. This is so much of humanity is there. So some people that we know or have heard of that will fall into this category would be Hitler and Stalin and Milosevic, Ariel Sharon, Arafat, Henry Kissinger, George Bush Jr., Tony Blair, Edgar Hoover, Hugh Hefner, Donald Trump. These are people driven by their strong desires. And they're still on the mutable cross. The Tibetan tells us until you know where someone is at, you cannot know how to read their chart. You can have the best chart possible. It could be the chart of a goat. And you would think that it's a very advanced individual because everything seems to be working out so beautifully on the chart. But until such time as you know where the person is and their point in evolution, it's very, very hard to determine how to interpret a chart. Okay, any questions so far? So you can see that on the mutable cross are fairly, you know, people that we know that are fairly strong people out there in the world. The majority of people still are on the mutable cross. So how do we get off this? When do we get off this? So each transition marks a point of crisis for the individual. See, crisis is not a negative word. Crisis brings about, hopefully, a revelation. Crisis brings about a change, hopefully. When the time of transition from the mutable cross onto the fixed cross arrives, four things need to occur. Whoops, sorry. Okay. First thing, a vast experience of life in the outer world. So lots of experiences have happened. Why is experience good? Experience leads to experiment. An experiment leads to then understanding and knowing. So eventually a dissatisfaction starts to happen in one's consciousness. One is not satisfied with everything that one has developed, one has accumulated. The things that one has, that their desires have amassed, leave them not satisfied. And we've heard all of this before, right? This isn't new, that we reach a point of dissatisfaction. And that is a very, very good stage. Because when you're dissatisfied, what do? You look, you start to question. You start to look within. So then one turns to invocation. You start to aspire to something greater. Oftentimes, it's the path of mysticism. As I said, a conscience starts to develop, a duality starts to develop. Should I, shouldn't I, is this the right thing to do? All this kind of questioning is a very important part because it causes you to think. It causes the mind to start to think. So that desire, that pull, starts to turn to love. So these are some of the things that start to happen while on the mutable cross. The mutable cross rules the path of probation for the average man, for the aspirant, and what we call the probationary disciple. This is the period of time as we move along. You know, it's taken thousands of years. So let's say the latter part of this movement or the latter part of this stage is the building of character into the personality. So vices are turned into virtues. It's the path of purification. It's the path of trying to bring about change within the personality so that you can become a better personality and you start becoming aware of some of your obstacles, some of the things that don't work and that you would like to see changes within. When I say you, you know I'm referring to the larger you. All of this is still prior to the first initiation. It's still the path of probation. And eventually, the probationary disciple is ready to be tested as he prepares for that first initiation. When he prepares for that first initiation, he starts to transfer from the mutable cross onto the fixed cross. The fixed cross is known as the path of discipleship. So then there becomes a reorientation. This is called the crisis or burning ground. And we are told by the Tibetan that it happens usually, not usually, it happens, period, in the sign Libra. Libra is the middle, really, of the zodiac. Libra is known as that interval. Libra is known as the path between the two great lines of force. So it is in Libra that one reverses themselves and reorients themselves and starts to move in the other direction. And this is a quote. Libra controls the moment of reversal of the wheel in the life of every aspirant, for there comes a moment in the cycle of lives wherein a point of balance is reached and a relative equilibrium is attained. And over this event, Libra presides. Does that mean then for 1 minute that one has totally moved on to the fixed cross? No. One still can go in both directions at the same time. There's a simultaneity that occurs. One can have almost one foot in one direction and the other foot in the other direction. As we're still cleaning up some of the things that we haven't completed on the mutable cross. So it takes a few lifetimes to eventually become so that we are established on the fixed cross. Okay, let's look at the fixed cross. What is its main aim? What is its goal? It's to develop soul consciousness and to be controlled by the soul. This is where we move in the anti-clockwise direction. This is the cross of discipleship. Desire then is spiraled up to aspiration, and the pull of the soul is what spurs the individual on. So what is it that one needs to learn on this cross? It is one aspect or some aspect of love, of the Christ consciousness. And that's why it's also called the cross of the crucified Christ. So again, all I've done here is pull out the four signs that find themselves on the fixed cross. But as we, as disciples, move from one incarnation to the next, we can be on any one of the, we can be born in any one of the signs, not just the signs of the fixed cross. For example, you can be born in the sign Cancer, and you can have a Cancer, you can have a Libra rising and, let's say, a Capricorn moon. Well, all of those are cardinal luminaries. Does that mean that one is on the cardinal cross? No. One is still on the fixed cross as one is developing greater soul consciousness and soul influence. This is the period where we are learning to be soul infused. The soul is starting to infuse the personality that has developed all these characteristics that we call character in the mutable cross. It is on this fixed cross that all three initiations take place, up to the third initiation. So let's see what kinds of things, what kinds of love, how this love is developed in these four signs. If we look at Aquarius, it becomes from personal desire, eventually to world service, motivated by love. When we talk about brotherhood, well, brotherhood, we learn while on the fixed cross. You can be sure that on the mutable cross, brotherhood has little meaning to the average person. In Scorpio, it's all about the glamour and illusion. So we learn to overcome glamour and illusion through love and through love of humanity. In Leo, remember, Leo is all about the individual. The Leo stage is about a self-identity. Well, here the identification eventually moves to identifying with soul. So from lower self to higher self. This is also the stimulation of creative ideas and projects. Eventually, all of this is over periods of many, many incarnations. It doesn't happen in one lifetime. It doesn't happen in just a handful of incarnations. And then, of course, Taurus, the sign that was all about desire. Desire has been spiraled up to aspiration. It's the unfolding of love, and that comes through all the various professions. You know, business, the arts. Remember, it's ruled by Venus. Venus is all about our values, our appreciation. So we can see how we as disciples are on the fixed cross right now.
Question.
Yes.
If one is on a fixed cross and a person is born, I didn't see Pisces. I just picked Pisces since I didn't see it on the fixed cross. Somebody has a sun sign in Pisces or a rising sign in Pisces or something that's not on the fixed cross, but the person is evolved to be on the fixed cross. So what good is the astrology birth chart in determining anything? It seems to me like we are in a particular lifetime in, say, 60 or 80 years. We're going through every year, each sign is coming up. I feel like I'm going through everything in that particular phase every month, not every lifetime.
Well, that's a good thing that you're sensitive enough to the energies that the various signs emit. But the fact that you're born, let's say, in Pisces, or that you might have all mutable cross luminaries, and by that I mean sun, moon, and ascendant, you are still moving if you have had your first initiation, and a large number of people that find themselves in this kind of work, we are taking for granted, would have had the first initiation, the Tibetan tells us, then you're still moving along the fixed cross. The fixed cross is the cross of discipleship. And that's why I keep stressing, it doesn't matter what sign you're born under, your movement, your direction, your orientation, and what you need to learn is the qualities that the fixed cross offers, which is all about love and consciousness. So in Pisces, you know, the experiences of Pisces are still for the purpose of helping other people, being more sensitive to impressions coming from soul, just to give you some qualities of Pisces, but you spiral it up from negative to higher qualities. If someone is born, let's say, in Sagittarius, again, it's on the mutable cross. Well, it's more about the higher vision, the higher learning, and bringing that to humanity in the form of teachings, in the form of philosophy. It's still with all for the purpose of learning love, teaching love, helping humanity, serving in some capacity. So if I haven't stressed it enough, I'm stressing it again. It doesn't matter what sign you're born under, what is your rising sign. Sure, you need to learn all those lessons that they offer you, but you're going in the direction of the fixed cross, which is anti-clockwise. You're moving in that direction. Does that help?
I think I'm getting this. Looking at a birth chart for somebody doesn't help me determine where they are on the path.
That's right.
I have to know where they are on the path or intuit where they are on the path, and then I can look at their birth chart to know what particularly they might be under the influence in this particular cross,
that's right.
Fixed cross. So the birth chart doesn't tell me where they are. It tells me or hints to what their lessons are going to be.
That's right. You're 100% right. See, it's very important for a proper astrologer to sit down with their client or a friend and start asking questions. And those questions have to be leading questions to try to understand by the answers where someone might be at. So you can ask someone, what do they see themselves doing in the lifetime? What would they like to see themselves accomplish? If they speak in terms of selfish things like, having a wonderful home, you know, driving certain cars, you know, wearing certain kind of jewelry or whatever, that tells you a lot about the person just by that kind of answer. If they start talking in terms of a service of some kind to humanity, that tells you a lot about where the person is at. So it's hard to determine, but at the same time, asking leading questions helps. Also, of course, if you know the person and you know through the way in which they live, you get some kind of idea of where they're at on the point of evolution. You know, what is it that they do? How do they do that? How angry, how easily do they lose their cool? Are their thoughts all kama manasic, which is emotionally tinged thoughts? Or are they able to separate their thinking from their feeling so that they can think intelligently? Do you see where I'm going with all of this?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. To determine where someone is at on the point of evolution is hard, but in fact, it is a necessary thing to be able to truly give a good reading. You know, and it all depends. If I do a chart, let's say, on someone that I know is working on themselves consciously and is by their life experiences or involved, let's say, here in this kind of a school, then I know that their motivation is for greater good. And so I can approach that reading from a different place than someone who comes to me and says, I got to know why I can't get a good job, or I got to understand why everybody's always angry at me. There's a different energy that they relate to me that helps me get a sense of at least a little bit of where they might be at. I know we're not supposed to judge, but at the same time, you want to get a sense of where a person is at. And that's why in the courses that you are learning here, we're always pushing you to try to talk about yourself. Where do you think you are on the path? To try to assess where you're at as objectively as you can through the various ways that we ask you for that, the various ways we get you to look at your life, whether it's astrological, whether it's rheological, whether it's through your experiences. It's all for the purpose of trying to, for you to assess where you might be at. Because knowing where you're at is very important, at least getting a sense of it, you know. Unless you're being guided by the master himself, one really truly never knows. But you certainly get an idea. Okay, so here's another way of looking at the cross. It's aligned with the establishment of right values. You remember the Buddha gave to everybody the Eightfold Path, and the first word in every one of those injunctions was right something or other, right livelihood, right speech, right everything. And so right values makes one think what is right and what is not right. So you see how the mind is what is being engaged here. And we know from everything we've studied thus far that one of the things that disciples have to learn is to use their mind. That's what the Aquarian Age is going to hopefully lead humanity to, much more mentality, much more using the mind effectively. It's a cross, we're told, of blinding light, of fiery pain, of bitter woe, and yet the cross of liberation. So let me ask you all, do you think this is an easy cross to be on? It's not. It's actually the hardest one to be on. It is, they say that the second initiation is the hardest initiation. Well, if you're taking all three initiation on this cross, you can be sure this is not going to be an easy time. You're in the middle here. You're in the middle cross. And being in the middle is never, never easy. This is the hardest part, because the more you know, the more you realize that you don't really know that much. You know, the more you learn, the more you'll realize there's more to learn. So here, the esoteric planets rule disciples. So one is here affected by both the exoteric planets as well as the esoteric planets. Because after all, your personality life is still there. You haven't done away with that. Okay. This is where most of awakened humanity is at. The first three initiations, as I've said, take place here. So I hope you recognize some of these symbols.
Would you go back a little bit and say, I tried to interrupt you.
That's okay.
But I realized my mic was muted. Would you go back one page? And you were saying something, you talked about the bitter and all that and the hardships we have.
Right.
But you said something after that, before you switched. I missed it.
Well, I was saying that we are ruled here by the esoteric planets, as well as the exoteric planets. One of the things that hopefully you learned if you were listening to some of the information that I gave on the astrology webinars, which are sitting there for anyone to listen to if you want to. They can all be easily accessed, and I would encourage all of you to listen to it. There's some really good material there. But the esoteric rulers only begin to influence an individual when their receptors are attuned so that they can receive the impressions from the esoteric rulers. And that only happens when an individual is somewhat awakened.
Yeah, so okay.
When you step onto this path of discipleship, you've already gone through the path of probation. You've already gone through the whole idea of building character and becoming a good, effective personality, a fairly integrated personality, so that you are ready to receive the energy of soul. Soul energy comes through, it sometimes wants to hit you over the head with a 2x4 if you keep rejecting those inner impulses. But eventually you get a sense of what they are. And at that point, astrologically, one is influenced also by the esoteric rulers, as well as the traditional or exoteric rulers. Okay?
Okay, I've got you.
Okay, good. So here, what do we see here? If you look at these symbols, many times, there are articles in magazines and there are articles in different books, and they use these symbols to make certain points. And these are the symbols that represent the four arms of the fixed cross. So, for example, here you can see my cursor. You've got the bull. That stands for Taurus. Here you've got the lion. Of course, that stands for Leo. Here you've got the eagle, and that's Scorpio. And here you have man, represents the server in Aquarius. None of the air signs have animals as symbols. The air signs all have man or more than one as representatives. And as we said last time when I talked about something in astrology, it's because man is manas, which is mind. Man is meant to rise above the animal instincts and the animal kingdom to use the mind. And air is the mental plane. So none of the symbols, none of the representations for the air signs are animals. Just another little tidbit here. Okay. So, some hypothetical examples of people on this fixed cross. So here we have intelligent but sensitive people who aspire to something higher and finer, who've had major emotional crises in the life, and who are dedicated to world service. So we see Princess Diana or Princess Anne, Prince Charles, Madonna, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Richard Gere, Whoopi Goldberg, Audrey Hepburn, Katharine Hepburn. The list can go on and on. These are just people that is in the public eye. But I'm sure you can choose all kinds of people that you know that have had emotional crises and are making a difference somehow in the world. So now we move to the next level within the fixed cross, very advanced human beings who identify with humanity as a whole, who are examples of unconditional love and powerful will, who are highly successful, highly intelligent, talented, creative, and effective human beings. There's so many that we could probably pull out that have made major differences. But here you have Albert Schweitzer, Albert Einstein, Margaret Mead, Winston Churchill, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, Oprah. Later on, I think she had her third initiation later on in her career. Gorbachev, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Obama is somewhere in here, whether he is up with the intelligent and sensitive people or up with the very advanced human beings. We don't really know. Has he had his third initiation? Is he almost at the third initiation? We don't know that, but we know he's a very clear thinker, does not get too involved emotionally. His thoughts are not calm and monastic, and he's constantly talking about trying to help the people, help humanity. So gives you an idea of the range. There's a range on every cross, because if all three initiations can happen on this cross, there's a big difference between someone who has taken the first initiation versus someone who's taken the third initiation. What they do have in common is a form of service, an intelligent approach to life. They're fairly together as people. And do they have crises? Of course they do. Do they have difficulty? Of course they do. Woes and pain and just a difficult time? Yes. Yes, they do. It's not an easy place to be. And you get a sense of that with this symbol that I've pulled out to show you how, if you look at the bottom, thousands of lives over here on the mutable cross, average humanity, that's the masses, lots and lots and lots of people. And the fixed cross is a lot less. This is the squeeze, hence the suffering. This is the squeeze that we live. This is the life of discipleship. And then, of course, after when you reach the cardinal cross, that's it. There's no other crosses. So once you're a master of the wisdom, you're here. You're always here. A little bit more information here. So the first three initiations, where soul infusion takes place, are all done on the fixed cross. Now, this is an interesting piece here. The fourth initiation is on no cross. As a matter of fact, the initiate finds himself in limbo between the fixed cross and the cardinal cross. Not quite ready yet to step onto the cardinal cross, but he's pretty well finished with the fixed cross because he has learned to be a soul-infused individual. The fourth initiation, we know, is all about the fusion of soul and personality so that the temple that houses the soul is no longer necessary or needed. But the individual is not yet totally identified with one's spirit self or the monad at the fourth initiation. At the fifth, he is. So the fourth is that in-between place. It's again, it's being in the middle. Once a person has become fully anchored in his or her soul's orientation, he's said to mount the cardinal cross. And that would be, you know, between the fourth and the fifth initiation, although the fifth initiation is taken on the cardinal cross, you're moving towards that. And then you can mount the cardinal cross. The life urge is now motivated by pure spiritual being, life, monadic, attraction, and intent. So this is will and purpose. It's all about the life of being about the greater will, the greater purpose. One becomes in line with the life that ensouls our planet. So on the cardinal cross, you've got another name for it called the cross of the risen Christ. And the purpose here is to develop spiritual or monadic consciousness, where the life is controlled by the spirit. So that first divine aspect of will and power is perfected in individuals on this cross, and the spirit and the soul personality, which are really all one now, because there's only the it's called the personality that's left, not the soul, but it's the soul that has totally infused that personality. And so you have a back down to a duality instead of a triplicity. And all of that is now fused into one unit, like a master. So that's a little far away for us right now. I'm not sure we can really totally relate with that. But it's always good to know where we're heading, what our goal is. Questions? So the arms of the cardinal cross, they lead to some aspect of will and power. So remember, this is going from the lowest to the highest. So it shows you the transformation that has occurred right up to the highest level. So it's from the sublimation of the personal will. The personal will was right there, still in the early stages, right up to the will of God. And in Capricorn, from personal ambition, because Capricorn is all about ambition, to working with the power of love. And in Libra, from the unbalanced fiery passions to the will to serve the laws of God. It's interesting that the laws of God are given to us in Libra and not in Capricorn. Libra rules the judicial and legislation areas. It is also ruled by Saturn. Hierarchically as well, it's being exalted, and Saturn has a lot to do with law. So it's an interesting thing that here in Libra, you're working with the laws of God. And in Cancer, identification with the masses to the will to serve the masses. You can see the flip on this, right? So you get a really good idea here of one's evolutionary path and how far we need to climb that path. And I
You
think I
think
hope
a master is concerned about looking at his chart?
they have different charts. We're told in the books that they look at our charts and they look at three-dimensional charts for us, right up to even four-dimensional charts. They still have charts as well, masters, because the master is only a fifth degree initiate. They go right up to nine initiations. We are told that the Christ and the Buddha are just about poised to take the seventh initiation, and they might take it together because one represents love and the other one represents wisdom. And the sixth initiation is the initiation of decision. This is where the initiate decides his or her future. Are they going to be one that ensouls a planet? Are they going to be Earth service? Are they going to move on to Sirius? Are they going to move on to other realms that we haven't got a clue about? It's the initiation of decision. But yeah, they have charts. Exactly how they look at the charts and what is looked at the charts, I don't know. I don't know. We only know what we're told
Should,
and then what we intuit.
shouldn't we have another chart beside our natal chart then?
I am sure that the masters look at our chart in many deeper ways than we look at our chart. There are some of us that know how to do conception charts. There are some of us that look at our, can look at more than one chart for ourselves, but it becomes a bit of a guesstimate, you know. I've heard the way they've arrived at conception charts. And there are different theories on doing that. So, it depends where one's interest is. But I am sure that in hierarchy, those that look at us, if we're worthy of looking to being looked at by a master or high initiates, they would look at charts in a totally different way than we would look at charts.
Okay. It's just some just that's just an idea I never thought of before
It's an
about
excellent
masters
idea.
needing a chart.
It's an excellent idea. So here, some hypothetical examples of people on the Cardinal Cross. Well, these would be your high initiates, like the Dalai Lama, like masters of the wisdom, Jesus Christ, Christ Maitreya, and the Buddha. And maybe there are more that we can't think of, but these are the ones that are the obvious ones to our eyes. So you get a pretty good sense of why the emphasis right now is on the fixed cross, why the emphasis is on the path of discipleship. And as you do your papers and you do your homework and you answer the questions, you will be able to see how these questions address what we've just talked about. In the first year of Quest Universal, you deal a lot with the path of probation. and you learn a lot about character building and the tests that you undergo. Once you start to move into the path of discipleship, it's all about learning consciousness. And then you start to see where you might be at, where your friends are at, where humanity is at. It's a really good eye into looking at the world, because you see, you know what you're looking for in a way. You know what you're looking for because you know what represents what. Make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Good. So, anybody else? Any questions? Just note this again, where we are at. We are going through the squeeze. And that's why that the cross is blinding light, fiery pain, bitter woe, and yet it leads us to liberation. Once you have reached God realization, which is the third degree, you're liberated. Eventually, when you go to the fourth initiation, you're off the cross of rebirth. You're not anymore bound to earth. That's really true liberation. So, having moved through the mutable cross, we are now, well, to some degree established onto the fixed cross. But humanity is moving through the mutable cross and moving in a clockwise direction. So if you ever want to figure out what it is that humanity is trying to learn, you start to look at the qualities, the characteristics of the signs as they move in that direction. So for example, let me see if I can put one out here. So for example, when you think about Pisces, then they move into Aquarius from a journey perspective, even though it doesn't happen sequentially. And so you start to think, now what is it that they have to learn that has to do with intelligence and building their personality as they're moving in that direction? So in Aquarius, they find themselves in groups, certainly not about service yet. They find themselves in groups, and do they get along with groups? Do they want their ego, to be recognized? So they start to have experiences, which then teaches them maybe eventually not to behave in a certain way. And then they move to the next sign, which would be Capricorn. And in Capricorn, ambition rules. So do they step all over other people? Do they reach the top of success? And are they happy there? So all of this starts to get them to think, to develop intelligence. And in order to reach the top, they have to do fairly well intelligently, whether it's through schooling or whether it's through, business acumen. It doesn't mean that they have a heart and soul yet, but they certainly learn through intelligence. And there's, just look at Wall Street, look at greed, look at the banks. These are all people still on the common cross. If all they want to do is make money and screw other people, where are they at? I mean, we should see this everywhere, all around us. Anyway, gives you a pretty good idea of how the majority of humanity is still moving in that direction. Well, unless you have questions, I'm pretty well done with the presentation.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Again.
That's fine.
Okay, you see a person that is very greedy in a particular lifetime, and then they change.
In that lifetime.
In a lifetime. Mm-hmm. They start out their early life, they're selfish, they're after all that, and they're greedy, and then they wake up.
Okay.
And they become aspirants, and they work very hard. How long does it take to go from the common cross to the second initiation, can it be, are we talking about lifetime still?
Yes.
If they've wakened up?
It has taken lifetimes to get to that point where they have still recapitulated everything that they have been and known, and then they get some kind of an awakening. It could be a crisis that brings that on. It could be the proverbial of being hit over the head by a 2x4, as I use a lot that example. A divorce, an accident, an illness, some kind of crisis that brings on an awakening of sorts where they start to reorient the life. And if they do that, you kind of wonder where Libra is for them, either in their chart, or have they progressed to Libra in a progression? Is Libra transiting somewhere for them? So they could be reorienting, you see, and they start to live differently. And we see this with people who have near death experiences, where they suddenly wake up and they reorient themselves. That could be starting to move off the mutable cross and starting to reorient onto the fixed cross.
A person could also be on the fixed cross and then come into the next incarnation and revert back to being selfish and everything, and then waken back to being on the fixed cross.
Sure. Yeah, because we do recapitulate and we do eventually get to the point where we left off when we died. We eventually get to that point in consciousness. So they could be, because this is still a transitional. And as I said, it takes a few lifetimes to become established on the fixed cross. It's not overnight. Yeah?
Yeah. I have a question, but it'll take me a minute to find it.
Uh-huh. Eva, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I apologize for coming in late. I thought it started at 4. I guess the change in time zones messed me up.
Right. I know that. But, you know, this will be available, and because we're recording that. So if you get a chance to download that, or to, you know, you can listen to that anytime on your own.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I sent out a reminder and I realized nobody got it. So I did something wrong on the campus, because I never got the reminder. So I apologize.
Yeah, I had 4 o'clock marked.
You know, I kept it at 8 GMT, which is if you take off -5, because if you're still in the Eastern Standard Time, it brings it down to 3.
I guess I was back on the daylight savings time, bringing it down to 4.
Exactly. And I've done that so many times.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
I'm reading out of Esoteric Healing by Alan Hopking on page 145. He states, the astrological symbols of Virgo and Scorpio are triple in nature, the only two which are. Grasping the meaning of this, and you will be ready to work with the new astrology and the significance of this abstruse science of triangles.
Can you just...
Triple in nature, the question is, why? What's he talking about?
Okay, can you reread the question again?
Okay, the astrological symbols of Virgo and Scorpio are triple in nature, the only two which are. Grasping the meaning of this, and you will be ready to work with the new astrology and the significance of this abstruse science of triangles.
Well, I can tell you one thing, that half of esoteric astrology, which is a very occult book, deals with triangles. So the Tibetan shows us all the various triangles, what is related to what in a triangular fashion. So I wonder if that is the reference to the triangle part of it. Triple in nature, from the top of my head, without giving this too much thought, the mantra alone for Virgo is triple in nature. I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am. The three aspects are being emphasized in that keynote. So that part of it is triple. Whether that applies to Scorpio, the actual keynote does not identify a triplicity as such. It's warrior am I, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. That does not necessarily speak to the triplicity that I would see right off the bat. I know, however, that it is ruled by Mars on all three levels, but then there's a number of signs that are ruled by the same planet on all three levels. So that in itself is not enough to say that that's what he means.
Could it be that the, like Scorpio has three planets, Pluto, Mercury, and Mars, and Virgo has three, Mercury, Vulcan, and Jupiter.
They all have three.
All the signs have three?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They all have three aspects, and therefore they all have three. One of them is a exoteric, which is your traditional ruler. The other one is esoteric. Can you hear me? One of them is esoteric, and the other one is hierarchical. Now, sometimes it's repeated. It's the same planet, but on different levels, you have to interpret it differently. And that's what I said about Scorpio. He gives us Mars as the exoteric ruler, and most of humanity still works with Pluto, and that's okay. So he gives us Mars as exoteric, Mars as esoteric. See what I'm saying? But then gives us Mercury, I think, as the hierarchical.
Yeah, I thought I was on to something. So I haven't solved it then.
So right off the bat, I don't really know what he's referring to. I'd have to go into the triangles that the Tibetan gives us and see what the relationship is. You see, I kind of think it has to do with the ruler being a ruler of another something else. That's the only thing I can think of. But right offhand, you know, you'd have to kind of draw lines to the various signs. There's a couple of pages in esoteric astrology that he does that for us.
Well, here's another clue. Mm-hmm. I'll give it to you. Maybe this will spur something. But you have, he speaks on the eye of the Father carrying the light of the constellation of the Great Bear. That's one. And then you have, the next one is the eye of the sun, S-O-N, carrying the light of the star Sirius. Mm-hmm. And then there is the eye of the mother carrying the light of the Pleiades.
Yeah, that one I can do. That one is very...
Okay, so there's your triple. Is that happening only Scorpio and Virgo?
No, it's that those three constellations represent the three aspects, and they are outside of our solar system. So, for example,
those are the first, second, and third ray.
Aspect, not necessarily ray. Aspect. Aspect is different than a ray, because you can have an aspect in ourselves too. All three aspects. Our personality is third aspect, our soul is second aspect, and our monad is first aspect. It's not necessarily the rays of those parts of us. You see what I'm saying? So aspects is referred to a little bit differently than a ray is. But yes, the Great Bear is considered the father, the first aspect. Sirius is considered the second aspect, the soul. And the third aspect is the Pleiades. And that's the intelligence or matter aspect. So those represent, outside of our system, our higher gods, so to speak.
Do those only happen primarily in those in Virgo and Scorpio?
No. That influences all of our solar system, and then trickles down to the various planets and so on. So no, those are the higher aspects outside of our system.
Eva, it's Kay here.
Yes.
Does the three levels of Scorpio come into this, like the serpent, the eagle, and the phoenix?
Sure, you could look at it that way, yeah.
Hmm.
You could look at it that way.
Those give the three levels of evolution in Scorpio, doesn't it?
Correct. So you have the lowest being the scorpion, deadly. You have the middle, which is the eagle, that soars above and sees everything, you know, from that perspective. And then you have the phoenix, which is all about rebirth and, you know, total change, transformation. So sure, you could look at it that way. That's actually a very good way to see the evolutionary process in there.
Now that was Scorpio, right?
Yes.
Okay, what about Virgo?
Well, does in Virgo you have the matter aspect. You have I'm the mother and the child. So the mother is the womb, okay, that gestates the Christ consciousness.
Right.
That is born in the cave of the heart. I am the mother and the child. I, God, I matter,
yeah,
am. So
third,
I, God, the is the third aspect, which is the life aspect. And the whole thing is...
That sounds to me like the three that we're talking about.
Three aspects. Always look for three aspects in everything. Yes.
But he says here that the astrological symbols of Virgo and Scorpio are triple in nature, the only two which are.
Okay, that's new to me if I look at it that way, because I've understood that these three aspects exist really in all the signs.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, exactly what he's referring to, I don't know, but I really like what Kay suggested for Scorpio and what we just try to figure out for Virgo. That kind of makes sense, but are they the only ones exclusive? Not in my eyes.
Okay.
I'll
keep digging.
Okay. Any other questions? I certainly hope that this has helped understand these crosses a little bit better.
Well, I've learned a lot, yes.
I appreciate that feedback. Thank you. And for those that aren't with us, they can listen to this and in the future and maybe get it that way.
You know, the main thing for me was to realize that when you're looking at a chart, you're not just looking at a incarnation.
That's right.
You're looking at the eternity.
Well, yes.
You're talking about crosses.
Yes, in terms of crosses. But when you're looking at a chart, that chart is specific to this incarnation. It's what you need to work on in this incarnation, in this lifetime. This is the purpose you've got to try to work out. These are the gifts that you bring with you from the past, and this is what you have to work with.
Okay, well, what about progressions and things like that?
Well, all of that shows you, you know, this your sun sign, what has it progressed to. So you add another dimension onto your natal, to your natal sun, and the same thing for all the other.
When did you start learning about that?
There's been too much noise, computer noise, and or background noise. I missed that.
Yeah, when the first year you've been teaching the basics. Is next year going to be more basics, or are we going to step up? And
I would love to say yes, but the answer is no. I know. Oh, there's a little baby there. I know that. We will be offering a few webinars that are going to be a little bit more advanced, and it'll be open to faculty as well as students. I'm going to invite Elena Dramcini to handle those. She's our resident knowledgeable astrologer. I mean, there's a lot of very good astrologers, but she offers us a really occult approach. So I'm going to invite her to offer a few really good tidbits. But no, the aim of this course in Moria Federation is to give you more the psychological and the spiritual understanding of astrology versus reading charts. if you come to the conference that is held every year, the pre-conference offers astrology, and then the astrologers that are there always read the charts, so it gives you a really good idea of how to read that from an esoteric perspective. It's a good 2-3 days that we offer through the University of the Seven Rays.
Should I buy a program that computes charts?
Well, Solar Fire so far is the best program. It'll okay. create the charts for you, but the interpretation is still something that you need to learn to do. Okay. You know, it'll interpret, but it's all computerized. It's not individualized.
Okay. Okay. On Solar Fire, can I pick what kind of houses I have?
With the computer noise, I missed what you said.
I say if I'm in the Solar Fire program, mm-hmm. Is it set up to be, I don't know the names of them, I think there's a cock house arrangement versus something else.
Well, do you have a chart yet?
Yes.
Okay, so...
BL made a chart for me.
Okay, well, it's very, the Solar Fire, if you plug in the right information, will give you a chart. It'll give you your main chart, and if you plug in other information, it'll give you a progress chart or a solar chart. But it's the interpretation that's important.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, everybody, thank you very much.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking time with me.
Thank you for attending. Thank you for your questions. It adds to the dynamic, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.